Good morning and thanks, Alison, first for that informative presentation, and I hope you're encouraged by the commitment of the CHO team and their faithfulness to all that's going on, and indeed to the opportunities that exist to be able to serve even more in that country. I was privileged to be part of the team, not only to get to spend time with Alison and Brian, two fantastic individuals, but to experience it for myself. You might have seen from the leaflet that's there, I was down as the leader. I think that was because with all of my policing training after 26 years, they felt that I would at least be able to keep the team safe. I have to say that I failed miserably in that challenge. My training was completely inadequate, and at one point elbows were raised, glasses did go flying, and there was a black eye. But that was only because the Cambodians asked us to show them some Scottish dancing. And Alison will vouch for the black eye. So I had a real privilege to be part of that team working for that week with them. And I think really what I wanted to highlight was in this part, we have the information, but I wanted to spend a bit of time and speak to each one of us to say, well, what does God expect of us? Not just in relation to CHO, but in terms of how we respond to people in need. And I wanted to think about that, but I wanted to highlight just particularly around the Cambodian efforts in human trafficking. For those of you that have heard either myself or some other police officer speaking, you know human trafficking is a huge, huge issue. Second biggest financial criminal element across the world is people trafficking. And in Scotland alone last year, over 150 referrals related to individuals from Vietnam, which is a country that borders Cambodia, by far the greatest number of any other population. So it's not remote, it's not off in the distance in a far-off country, it's absolutely here on our doorstep. But I'm not here to talk about police statistics, you'll be glad to know, because normally they're not very good or encouraging. But I am wanting to talk about what your response should be in relation to dealing with people in need. And I'm going to read from Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 7 to 11. If there is a poor man among your brothers in any of the towns of the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your poor brother. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs. Be careful not to harbour this wicked thought. The seventh year, the year for cancelling debts, is near, so that you do not show ill will towards your needy brother and give him nothing. He may then appeal to the Lord against you, and you will be found guilty of sin. Give generously to him, and do so without a grudging heart. Then because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to. There will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed towards your brothers and towards the poor and needy in your land. So as it says in verse 11 there, there will always be poor people, and there will always be people in need. And I don't say that as a sad, depressing indictment. I'm going to say that in an encouraging context of God's promise to us. Because I have to be honest and say, when I was preparing for this morning, I felt a real sense of being overwhelmed by need in my job, and from what you'll probably see on your televisions, the world is in great need right now. There are so many things happening that are leaving people without families, without homes, without hope. So at times it can seem overwhelming. Where do we start? Where should we focus? What can we actually do that's going to make a difference? Well, verse 11 confirms one thing: there will always be poor people. And like I say, I don't say that to discourage you. I say that to release some of the pressure from you, reduce your expectations of what we can achieve. You see, God saw our need, and he sent us Jesus. And that's all that this world needs. But until he comes again, we will never wipe out poverty. We will never wipe out people who have need. Because until there's a new heaven and a new earth, because of our fallen state, this world will be in need. But I don't say that discouragingly, because God did send Jesus. And so the present isn't permanent. There will be a new heaven, and there will be a new earth, and there will be a time when there will be no need. We won't be in pain, and we won't be in hurt. So, what does God ask us to do? What is he calling you to do today? Well, listen to what he warns us of in verse 9. Be careful not to harbour this wicked thought. The seventh year, the year for cancelling debts, is near, so that you do not show ill will towards your needy brother and give him nothing. Jesus may be the answer, but if you're waiting for him, then you are not doing as God commands you. Waiting isn't an option. Complacency in waiting on Jesus coming, which is assured, isn't an option. We absolutely, as verse 11 goes on to say, I command you. God is commanding you to be open-handed towards your brother. And you'll recognise that there's no qualifying criteria. It doesn't say when you're rich enough, when you're talented enough, when you're skillful enough, I would like you to be open-handed and help the poor. He's commanding you to do it now. As Alison said, he wants us to walk that walk. We may know that Jesus is the answer and that he's coming. How do we show that and demonstrate it to this world who are in great need and in great need of him now? So God has a plan for each of you, and I'm just going to read what it says in Hebrews 6, verse 10. God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help. Do you notice what it says there? It says, shown love. It doesn't talk about feeling love. The world doesn't care whether you feel love. It cares whether you show that love. If you truly believe and you truly feel something, you are absolutely compelled to act. It reminds me of the story of the wee girl, and obviously we're on Father's Day, and I'll come to that in a second, but who's sitting at the table, and her dad had decided that he was going to make her our dinner that day. And as dads often don't really know what their children like to eat, he did ask her, do you like broccoli? And she said, oh, Dad, I love broccoli. And he thought, fantastic. So he serves out the dinner, the broccoli's there, she eats all of her dinner except the broccoli. And he said, I thought you said you loved broccoli. She said, I do, just not enough to eat it. So we can say that we care, and we can tell people that we feel love, but if there's no love demonstrated in action, then we can't truly feel it. Because when you feel, you're compelled. I see it every day, because when people feel angry, they're compelled to act, and obviously, normally to detrimental consequences. But if you feel compassion and love, it will be visible, and God asks us to show that love. And it also says in Hebrews to continue. What does it mean to continue? It means to not stop. So this isn't a quick, let's go do a bit of help and walk away. It says continue. There is no end to God's calling and commandment to you to walk and to help the needy in this world. And I'm going to illustrate what that might look like by speaking about someone who I knew very, very well. It is, of course, Father's Day today. And my dad, he died a couple of years ago in August 2015, was indeed a character. He was one of these guys that would always tell you about his life growing up and his past and when I was a boy. And again, it reminds me of the story of the wee boy speaking with his dad, and his dad had been trying to get him to behave better. And he was the same sort of dad, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have TVs, and when I was a kid, you know, we didn't get to play outside till late, etc. And so this wee boy had said to his dad, "Well, Dad, for £20, I'll be good." And his dad just looks at him and said, "Son, when I was your age, I was good for nothing." And in terms of being good for nothing, there are the credentials of my dad. He was good for nothing. He wasn't rich, he wasn't talented, he wasn't educated. And I don't tell you that harshly or as a sad story. I tell you that because despite all of that, my dad became a nurse, a missionary in Congo, and a preacher across Scotland. Why? Because in God's hands, he could transform lives. Because God's not calling you to be anything other than who you are right now, right at this moment. He will do the rest. When God calls you, he equips you. And he equipped my dad against all odds. Really, if you saw the evidence, it's laughable to think that God could have done anything in his life, and he absolutely did. And I want to illustrate two things that stand out in terms of what my dad, or who my dad was as an individual in his Christian life. And I hope that you will take something from both of those things. The first thing was, what can you give to the people of Cambodia? What can you give to the people in need? Well, I'll tell you what my dad gave. He gave faithfulness and prayer. Alison spoke about how Cho every day had daily devotions. Every day was started and centred around Christ and his word. In our house, every day was started with daily devotions. As a child growing up, every morning before school, my sister, brother and I sat with my dad while we had family prayers. And part of those family prayers was a book. And it was a missionary book. And in that book, for 31, because we had to cover all months, sometimes you got prayed for a bit extra, and obviously in a leap year it was a shame if you missed out, you were number 30. But every day, there was a picture of a family, a missionary family, in that book. The Galbraiths, the Kennedys, Maisie Smith, I could name them all, because I did it all of my life growing up. Every day, we prayed for those missionaries. To be fair, my brother, sister and I were actually just praying that our friends didn't call too early at our door to go to school, because my dad wasn't one to put the book away. He was very welcoming and would bring our friends in to join us in family prayers. You can imagine how that went down as a young child. I always joked to my mum saying it actually was a form of abuse. However, just getting a bit out there. So she is here today. So every day without failing, can I tell you something else? As you all know, I never miss the opportunity to remind you, however, that included Christmas Day, my birthday. We didn't escape family devotions. Holidays, we were all packing our trunks and our shorts. What did my dad pack? The missionary book. And it went with us everywhere. Now, I tell you, I can't speak for the lives of all the people. I can tell you who they all are, but I can't speak for the impact that that had on their life. But I can speak about the impact it had on my life. Because not only did he commit them to prayer every day, the only other people that were given that privilege were his family. And I, and my brother, and my sister, every day of my dad's life were committed to prayer. And in my life, that hasn't meant that I have escaped pain, hardship, troubles. But what it has meant is that I have absolutely always known God's presence, his peace, and his power in my life. The greatest gift that my dad gave was his faithfulness to prayer. And therefore, in these seats, and when you go home, this isn't a calling about heading off to Cambodia. It's about saying, do you love enough to pray? And that's not just to pray when you see the need. That's to pray and to continue and to continue and to continue and to pray without stopping. That's what this world needs. And that's where my dad's faithfulness to prayer came in. And that's what I would ask of you in terms of the challenge this morning. Are you prepared to continue to pray and not stop? Even though you know the answer is coming, in actual fact, that should make your prayers more earnest. But please think about your willingness to demonstrate that love. The second thing in terms of what my dad gave was practical service. And again, it reminds me of the story of the dad whose daughter had grown up and was due to get married, and the young boy was coming round to meet mum and dad, and mum says, you really need to speak to him and find out a bit about him. So dad says, oh, you know, let's go for a walk and a talk in the garden so he could find out about this boy and see if he was suitable for his daughter to marry. And so the dad says, what is it you're going to be doing then? What are your plans? He said, well, I'm going to go to Baptist College and become even more theological than Alistair Black. He said, that should be easy. He then said, okay. He said, so what's your actual plan? So how are you going to get my daughter a house? He said, well, I'm going to focus on my studies and God will provide. So dad said, oh, okay. He said, and what about money? You know, I mean, you've got an engagement ring and a wedding to pay for. I mean, what's your thoughts there? He said, oh, well, I'm just going to keep concentrating on my studies and God will provide. And he said, oh, okay. And he said, what about family? I mean, what's your thoughts? What's your plans for future for the family? He said, don't worry. God will provide. And so the conversation continued and he kept saying, God will provide. So anxious mum, as always, you know, well, how did you get on with your walk and talk? And he said, well, it's pretty hopeless, really. He's no money, no plans, no real prospects. But the good news is, he thinks I'm God. You see, as Alison says, oh, very well talking the talk, but are you prepared to walk the walk? And that's about showing it in action. My dad dedicated his life to practical service. He didn't just talk of his God. He walked and experienced life serving, faithfully serving. He was a missionary in Africa, as I mentioned. He then became a preacher well into his 70s, preaching in universities. It was the only way he was ever going to get in a university. Universities, prisons, churches all across Scotland. All of his life he committed, because all that God asked of him was willingness. Like I say, the commandment isn't about when you are equipped. It's about doing it now and being ready now. My dad, because of God, was able to transform lives. And so God's calling to you today is, yes, there are people in need, but are you faithfully going to commit them and continue to commit them to prayer? And are you prepared to be willing to go where I ask you to go? That might not be Cambodia. Might not be Africa, it might just be to your next door neighbour, it might just be to your family, but are you willing to give of yourself? And as a willing, faithful servant, God can achieve incredible things. And I want to leave with showing you a picture. So that's my dad on the right there. And that was him at his 80th birthday, just before, a few years before he died. And the reason I've got the flowers on the other side, these are the flowers that we had in this church right here at Thanksgiving service. And you can't actually see it just now, probably, but you'll see on this one at the moment, we've got the banner that says, "Praise the Lord, O my soul." I took a picture of those flowers to show my mum later on, and I'll come to that in a second, because I wanted to highlight something to her about those flowers that we had ordered for that service. But when I was preparing that picture, when I got home, I saw at the back what that banner said. And the banner at the back says, "Behold, I am alive forevermore." And you see, my dad became a Christian when he heard John 3:16, when it said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but will have everlasting life." That was the verse that brought my dad to faith. And when I got home and was making the picture for my mum, there I thought, you know, God and I are so fantastically connected, because he's got a sense of humour, and I love a sense of humour. "But behold, I am alive forevermore" was right in front of me. And it was incredibly encouraging. But the other thing, the red rose that seems to be slightly out of place in amongst those flowers, the reason that red rose is there is because my mum and dad went to Dublin for their honeymoon before they took the 2-week sailing to Zaire, to Congo. And when they were there, my dad referred to my mum as the Rose of Tralee. All very romantic. It was the only romantic thing he ever did in these 40-plus years of married life, as my mum can vouch for. But from that day, right the way through, whenever it was my mum's birthday or anniversary, she got one single red rose. And so on his Thanksgiving service, we decided to put in that single red rose. But what's really interesting about that, as I was preparing for today, and I thought about Father's Day, is that Father's Day, the flower for Father's Day, is a rose. And a red rose signifies, when people wear it, that your father is alive. A white one signifies that they're no longer here. But a red rose signifies that your father is alive. And the point of telling you that is because what God is actually saying to me and to all of you is his promises cannot be broken. He has promised that he will be with us always. He has promised us his presence. He said, "I will never leave you. I am with you always." He has promised us his peace no matter what we face, no matter how despairing things seem in terms of the needy. He has promised us his peace. And he has promised us his power. He can do immeasurably more. Remember, Paul says that immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine, according to the power, his power, that is in us. So if you're here thinking, "I'm not sure, and what does that mean?" Well, what I would say is God is calling you now. He's calling you now to be faithful in dealing with those in need, because he has assured the outcome. It is guaranteed, but he still needs your help. And when I look at that red rose, I am reminded that nothing can change the outcome. But what can change is how we get there and who we take with us. So you can either leave here this morning feeling compassion and sympathy for those in need, or you can go out and show them that God's alive and that he loves them, and that they can know eternal life. And so when you think about Cho and all those people, and when you think about those in need in your own environment, remember God is not unjust. He will remember your works, and he will remember the love that you have shown, not felt, the love that you have shown for those in need. And when you think about Father's Day and all that it represents, I would just encourage you to think about the two factors that made my dad stand out. No, far from perfect, but it was his faithfulness to prayer, and it was his faithfulness to service. And that was because he showed it and he continued to show it without stopping. Let's just pray. Lord, we just thank you that you have given us an assured hope, that we know the outcome, that you will come again, that you saw our need and you sent us Jesus. But I just pray for everyone in here that they will recognise that you have commanded them to be open-handed. You have commanded them to show your love. It's the only way this world will get to understand what it means to know and love you. And I just pray that you will speak to everyone here, that they will be faithful in their prayers and that they will be faithful in their service. And then the rest is up to you. And the good news is you've already fulfilled your plan. Jesus has come and he'll come again. And I just pray for that day when all the needs of this world will disappear, when all the wrongs of this world will be put right. And I just long for that day when we can truly rejoice because your promises cannot be broken. I just ask that you'll be with everyone here. Amen.